Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hello, it's The Weeknd, and it's John Gibbons hosting this week. I'm joined by Ian Ryan, by Kieran Molyneux, and by Chloe Bloxham. I nearly forgot your name, the surname there, Chloe. That's a tired, slightly hungover man, and slightly sad as well, because Liverpool have lost again. They've lost another home game, and Ian, I'll start with you. It's getting tough to take, isn't it? I mean, you know, there's been a few blows, you know, recently. There's been a few bad performances. It feels in a row, the odd one obviously thrown in, where you feel like you get a bit of a lift. But I mean, it was a tough one last night for me.
Painful, John. That might have been the worst one, to be honest. And I think you're right to say, you know, it's been a long time now where we've suffered what feels like very, very similar defeats. And I think most people are realistic, John. You know, after Van Dijk went down injured, after Gomez got injured, I think most of us made our peace with the fact that we probably weren't going to win the league this season. It was going to be really, really tough. I don't think anyone was expecting a drop-off like this, where we're suddenly finding ourselves in seventh. I mean, five home defeats on the spin. I mean, it's never happened before. And you don't see that coming. You just don't, given some of the seams who've rolled into Anfield, yes, some of them are decent size, but some of them aren't. And it just seems like there's an awful lot of players now who are just well below the best. And there's probably mitigation there. Well, we know there is. We know there's the injuries. We know it could be, you know, physical fatigue, mental fatigue. But saying all that, John, there's an awful lot of lads there that just look like they're not doing some of the basics right. And that's where it gets you a little bit. And I caught a little bit of the kind of post-match stuff last night. And, you know, some of the things that John had said, I'd put out similar tweets. And it was things around just the mentality just seems to have gone from lots of them. And again, you know, just mitigation there. But the Sadio Mane thing, the penalty early on, I mean, it's things like that that can turn games. And it was a second time in two games where he's not gone down. And listen, you don't get any thanks for that. No one comes around afterwards and says, listen, well done for staying on your feet. Mm. If he goes down there, maybe the game's different. And that's just one incident. But there's other things that have been going in football matches recently, that just stick in the throat a little bit. And it's things like that gnarliness, that ability to be a bit snide. Just, you're looking at lads and you want them to stand up and be counted a little bit. And there just seems a real lack of that at the minute.
Yeah, I think that's fair, isn't it, Kieran? They don't seem to have a huge amount of fight about them at the moment. They just seem to be going through the motions. And listen, you know, they're having to go out there week after week, no supporters. It must feel like a strange, you know, existence to them. So you've got to say that. But, you know, when you look at opposition and they look more at it and they look like, you know, they've got, you know, a bit more of an idea of how they want to get about you, you know, Liverpool need to match that at least, don't they?
Yeah, I've been saying to a few of my mates as well, like, injuries are the root cause of all this. We know how this started. And whether we've addressed them right or whether we've had more injuries or we've had midfielders go into centre-half and get injured, no matter how many injuries we've had, there's still players on the pitch in a lot of these games that are better than the opposition lineup. We've gone into games where we've had the players on the pitch to do the job. Out of position, maybe. Injuries, not the strongest bench in the world, but there's been sides where we could have won, that we could have rolled and we haven't rolled them, and we haven't dug deep and we haven't worked hard. And it seems to snowball now. The effort's decreasing. There's players moping around. I'm not just seeing an injury problem anymore. I'm seeing a deeper problem now, which is me worry a few games back when, you know, just before the derby and stuff, is that you start to put a lot of damage into next season if you carry on, and you're starting to put yourself in a position where our players going to look at themselves and think, is this project run its course for me? Am I looking elsewhere? I'm not saying that's happening, by the way, because I haven't got a clue, but you put yourself at risk. Of players looking elsewhere, and, you know, manager thinking, is this, am I doing the right job here now, and all them sort of things that happen when you lose game after game after game after game. And it need, I think it was Neil on the last show said, just stop losing. Like, that's how I was on, sorry. And we haven't done that, and we've changed the setup slightly, we've changed the lineup and partnerships centre half millions of times, but there's still work rate, isn't he? There's still like, when we're Liverpool, we've lost four games at Anfield there. We do not lose that game last night, and we just did. So it's just, I don't know what the answer is.
Yeah, they looked better than us, Chloe. I thought they had a better game plan. I thought, you know, they seemed to be going about the business better. And we get a bit of a let-off with the offside goal. And you think, oh, here we go. We might respond to this. And they just don't. And if anything, Chelsea get confidence from that. And it's a bit too easy for them, I think.
Yeah, I think it was very naive tactically. I think, you know, what you're coming up against, Werner, you know, he was in the German Bundesliga. He was one of our top priorities before he went to Chelsea. You know exactly what the style of player is. You know, Chelsea know we don't have a known centre-half. You've got a 20-year-old lad who at times has been tonked in the Bundesliga, has played like two Premier League games. And then you've got Fabinho coming back from a long injury and you're just sticking him in at centre-half and telling them, well, you need to be on it for this game. When he's got no form or any kind of match minutes in him. So I think it was very naive by us. You know, we got let off with, Werner tries to chip Alisson, that should be a goal. Then the actual goal that should be a goal and isn't given a goal. And then they score and it's from the same repeated thing over the top balls and we just didn't learn. You know, for me, this is on Jürgen. Like, it was a very, very, very bad performance. But Jürgen didn't help with the tactics, nor did he help with the subs. And for me, that yesterday was ignorance. It really was. It was like, well, Tuchel's, you know, just started. He's a gym manager. I'll be the bigger manager. I'm the bigger person. And that's not the game. You need to tactically change to adapt to the other team. And it wasn't good enough by us. And we got nothing out of the game, which we didn't deserve. It's one of the first times I've seen anyone in recent history come to Anfield and dominate possession. We were all over the place.
Yeah, they dominate the midfield, and they seem to have an extra man. And I'm with Chloe in that I'm like, well, you know, I'm not asking for subs off on 30 minutes or anything like that, you know, but... It looked like we needed to do a bit of a shift or something to get sort of, you know, a bit of help in there, really. But it didn't quite happen. And we did sort of seem to stick to the same thing. And then the subs are just strange for me. It's like for like in terms of position. But then, you know, the lads you were bringing on in terms of taking off, you know, it don't make sense to me. So we're not changing anything about how we play. And you know, the actual personnel ones are leaving me scratching my head.
And it's not the first time you're having a conversation that's similar as well, because I've done post-match shows recently where I'm saying similar things. It just feels very odd, some of the substitutions. And I didn't particularly like the lineup. I have to say, I think I would have made a couple of different changes. I mean, Bobby Firmino's burning my head out, to be honest, to the point where I don't think I'll be starting at the minute. And whether that means you have to get another midfielder in there, potentially, because I don't think Jota would have been ready to go last night. But the subs he makes, and listen, let's talk about the Salah one, because that's the big one. And I think I put out at the time on Twitter, it was only missing Stevie Gerrard shaking his head. It was very Benitez Torres at Birmingham, do you know what I mean? It felt a little bit like that. You know, Salah can't believe what's happening, really. And I know Jürgen comes out later and says, you know, there was fatigue there, but I mean, I don't know. Listen, maybe he's got the numbers behind it, but it felt like a strange one to me. You know, you're looking for an equaliser, you're looking for a winner. You don't take off Mohamed Salah because he's the only one at the minute who looks like he's offering anything in terms of a goal threat. You know, Bobby Firmino and Sadio Mane, and I love Sadio Mane, I love the bones of him, but he's got away with it a little bit recently in terms of his performances. They've been well below par. So you're thinking either of them two are probably the obvious. It's not Mohamed Salah because he's the only one who's probably been anywhere near his level in terms of those forward players. And his goal return, you can't really argue with it. His goal return is what it should be. So that was a bit strange. And I think, you know, you can look at the Curtis Jones one as well and think, I'm not sure about that. So I think, again, from Jürgen, it wasn't his best night at the office. And listen, you feel a little bit sorry for him. And I don't want to come on these shows, Gibbo, and have a go with the manager. A manager who's given us a title win and a European Cup win. Because let's be honest, he's been nothing short of brilliant since he arrived at the club. And I'm in no doubt, by the way, he's the man to sort this out. Mm. He might need a little bit of support in terms of investments. And I think he probably should have had more of that, if I'm being really honest, over recent months. Over recent years, if you like, as well. No doubt he's the man to sort it and take us forward. But at the minute, there's no getting away from it. He's had a couple of poor months, to be honest. You could probably even take it back to that Midland away game where he plays one or two players that probably shouldn't be anywhere near the pitch that night. And from there on in, there's been a number of games where he's probably just been a little bit below his best, the manager.
Yeah, the Salah one, I'm still sort of scratching my head, Keogh. I've seen a few people say that he wasn't happy you know, with some of his tracking back or whatever, you know, he'd had a word with him about not tracking runners and things. And look, that's important. And, you know, we've got where we are by work rate. But I just look at the other top clubs, you know, in Europe or in our division and think, would they take off their top scorer when you need a goal? And, you know, Salah's up there with anyone in the world in terms of a forward. And you know, anyone you want to talk about, you know, at any club, Salah matches them. You know, for his quality and for what he's done over the last few years. And if anyone's going to get you the goal, it is him, and that's what he's proved this season. You know, he's managed to be Premier League top scorer in a team that struggled. And I don't know if you're taking him off just because he's not tracked someone, you think, well, surely you sort that out tomorrow, you know what I mean? You'd have a word with him and say, I need that from you, do you know what I mean? You don't just hook him, you know, it feels over dramatic for me, if that is the reason.
Yeah, I mean, I can't make any sense of it, in the sense of, he's our biggest threat, as we've all said on the show so far. It doesn't make any sense, because if anyone's going to score at the minute, it's probably Mo Salah. Firmino's been, I mean, he doesn't score at Anfield very often, he hasn't done for 18 months, 2 years now. Mane has been off the boil for a few weeks. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know, but I'm not really going to question the manager, who's given us so much in a time like this, because I don't know how to fix this, and I hope he does. I do think we're struggling because we haven't got a squad strong enough to cope with this. And we've had injuries, I get that, but I'm talking striking options. I'm talking being able to, like, you know, mix it up and being so reliant on one player. If it is all down to that Van Dijk injury, then that's a lesson that needs to be learned, in the sense of if we rely on one player like that, whether it's a centre-half or a centre-forward, we don't score at that end, or we concede every single week at that end. That's not right. That's not what our European title, that's not what champions do. So Jürgen needs to address it. I don't understand why he's took Salah off. Is it down to minutes? Is it down to the fact that he's seeing signs of him burning out, not tracking back, and think, I'm not having you going as well over the next few weeks? If you're not tracking back, you must be knackered. Let's get you off. Maybe it's something like that. Maybe it's a testament to Salah how hard he does normally work. I don't know. It's baffling, isn't it? But I think if we had more options at the other end of the pitch, and we look at Jota, and I think he's great, by the way, but I don't think he was signed as a goal scorer and centre forward. I think he was signed as cover for Mane and cover for Salah, in case one of them go out, and to be a wide player who's versatile and can drop in. I don't think he was bought to be Liverpool's main goal scorer from the number nine position. So yeah, we need to strengthen. I think we need to strengthen at the top end of the pitch as well as the bottom end of the pitch, but Jürgen is definitely the right man to sort this out.
Yeah, he is, and he'll be pulling his hair out, won't he, Chloe? That's the thing, Jürgen, with what he's seeing and what sort of happened to this team, really. And I think he'll expect a better reaction from the players, and, you know, it's him who picks them and it's him who motivates them and things like that. But he's within his rights to say, well, I'm sending you out there and I need more from you. You know, I need more personality, probably a bit more fight as well on the pitch, and just them to sort of, you know, show why they're at Liverpool and why they've got where they are. You know, he's got it in his rights to be asking them of that, really, today.
Yeah, I think, you know, against Chelsea, a lot of players didn't look like they were playing for that badge. And I mean that. And that might be the first time in a while that I've ever thought that, because I didn't see the termination. The only player who I could see with real ones, be fair to Manny, he didn't stop running. Was he crap? Absolutely. But he didn't stop running. But Salah, to me, was the one who was trying to get everyone, you know, he does that brilliant ball for Curtis Jones, who doesn't control it. If he does, he's through. He does the ball to Manny. Manny should score. You know, it felt like the only chances, even if they were half chances, were coming from him. And he felt like the only one who was saying, come on, lads, like, get your act together. And it's like, without that Virgil van Dijk, without Henderson, you don't have that, like, leader. And it's very odd, because that group last year, every single one of them was leaders. It wasn't down to one person. They were a collective. And this year, it's all over the place. And obviously, injuries have accounted to that, but I'm getting bored of saying it, if I'm honest. I'm getting really bored of saying it, because there's enough quality on that pitch to go and put out a performance. And if not a performance, at least give it 100%. And it just looked like they were leggy. It looked like they were off the pace. They weren't ready. it was really, really bad. And I'm not looking forward to the fact that it's another home game on the bounce, because, you know, five's worse enough. Don't make it six.
Yeah, we'll come on to Fulham in part three, and we'll talk about, you know, what we would do, what we can, maybe try and do to sort of mix it up a bit, because I don't know, Ian, it feels at the moment that, you know, maybe for them, you know, maybe for the players, you know, they maybe need something different to sort of believe in, or something different to sort of think about, really, because, you know, they must be looking at each other and going, you know, who's going to get us out of this? They're looking around and thinking, well, you know, this hasn't worked for us. You know, the midfield, you know, they're being asked to go again, and I feel for them in a way, because they're the last three left almost, aren't they? Mm. You know what I mean? But at the same time, I didn't think the balance of the midfield really worked, and, you know, you could maybe got asking people to do things that they're not necessarily suited to. I don't know, but I don't know. I just feel that, you know, I'd like to see maybe one of them, you know, try and get a bit more of a grip of it than they were able to as well.
I don't think the midfield worked at all, John. And listen, the manager is hamstrung a little bit by options. I know Keita is on the bench. I can only assume he's not ready to start. Again, though, surprised he never made an appearance. You're thinking, yep, if you need a goal, Naby Keita might be able to offer you something a little bit different. He carries the ball really well. We've not seen him anywhere near enough. We know that. I love James Milner, but it didn't feel like a James Milner type of game, to be honest, because, you know, we needed a goal, and Milner brings a lot of things, but bringing goals isn't really one of the things you associate with James Milner. And I think that felt strange. You know, there's no getting away from it. We all love, or we were all made up when Thiago arrived at the club, but it hasn't really worked yet for him. And again, I think there's mitigation there. I don't think he envisaged not playing next to Henderson and Fabinho. I think when he arrives at the club, he's thinking, well, I'll probably play with those lads more often than not. Maybe a little bit of Gini Wijnaldum as well. It hasn't happened. And he's probably not really got the legs to be doing what he's being asked to do at the minute. And it looks like it's bypassing him a little bit. And I do feel sorry for him, because there's no doubt there's loads and loads of quality there, and he can run a football game for you. But I think he needs the right lads around him to really work in this Liverpool team. So, yeah, it's tricky for the manager. And he's got to play Chamberlain knocking about there. But every time you see him, John, he just looks an absolute mile off it. And yeah, I think he's a player that you probably need to start playing from the start to get the minutes into him. But because we're in such a tricky spot at the minute, you don't want to carry any more passengers. Yeah. And there's a chance if you play Oxlade Chamberlain, he's going to be a passenger. And it might take him 3 or 4 games. We haven't got 3 or 4 games because Liverpool Football Club needs to start putting wins on the board. And that's the thing here. And, you know, you're looking at the table this morning, and it's fucking absolute graft, John. You know, you're looking at it, you're thinking, oh, can they get top four? It feels more and more unlikely. And you can't really believe you're saying that, to be honest, because you can't get away from the fact that, yes, there's injuries, we know that. You know, we're talking about it all the time. But there's an awful lot of title winners on that pitch last night. There's an awful lot of lads who've won the European Cup on that pitch last night. And that's what disappoints me, that there's one or two of them maybe using it as an excuse. The low on confidence, there's no doubt about that. But I'm still seeing things I don't like. And I'm seeing people letting players walk past them a little bit too easy. You know, you see it for the goal. And I think Trent's been getting back to his near his best a little bit in recent games, but you've seen him do that this season, but it just looks a little bit too easy for the forward to go past him. And he's not the only one, by the way, and I don't want to pick on Trent, because, you know, as I say, he's been getting back to his best, I think, recently in terms of some of his performances. But again, last night, you look at the goal, you think he could be doing better. But there's other lads as well, and as you said when he started this question, you know, the midfield, it just got overrun. But when it was in possession of the football, it didn't do the things it needed to be doing in terms of facilitating and giving those front lads the balls that they want. So he's got problems there. But Fulham on Sunday represents an opportunity. You know, you're going into a game against Fulham where you're thinking, fucking hell, we might not be favourites for this, which just seems absolutely wild. But given the form, you know, Fulham will be thinking, we fancy this. I think one thing he's got to look at, John, he's got to look at that line, that high line. I understand why he wants to play it. I understand he wants to compress the pitch and be aggressive and stuff. But you've got a 20-year-old rookie, and you've got a lad who's a midfielder by trade, playing the line that's just so aggressive. And any team worth the salt could just look at that line and go, right, we're going to drop balls over the top. And if you've got anyone with pace, it's an absolute free-for-all. And I think they're going to have to look at that line and what they do with it, and maybe just drop it back a little bit. And it might not be ideal for how Jürgen wants to play, but you've got to cut your cloth a little bit. So I think that's something he's got to look at on Sunday.
Okay, we'll look ahead to Sunday in part three, and I'll be asking everyone on the call what they would do and any changes that they think Liverpool can make to get something out of that game. But one thing that was nice to see last night was that Liverpool Football Club paid their respects to Ian St. John, obviously a club legend. He was on the front of the programme, which was good to see, and also the players did a minute of applause before the game. Yesterday, Lizzie spoke to a couple of people who knew the Saints and worked with the Saints and wanted to pay their own respects to him on the Anfield Wrap, so we're very pleased that we were allowed them to do so, and Lizzie did that, and you can hear that now.
And it's Lizzie Doyle for the weekend, and as you all know, the legend that is Ian St. John passed away this week, and was at the Anfield Wrap, wanted to pay tribute to him, and I thought there'd be no better way than to get a couple of people on who knew St. really well. We've heard loads of gorgeous, loads of lovely, lovely tributes about Ian St. John the last couple of days, but I wanted to get two people on. I worked with at City, who worked with him at Radio City, which, if you don't know, is the sort of biggest radio station in Liverpool. It's got a really famous sort of sport and history. Loads of really amazing live sport and moments happened on Radio City, and Ian St. John was a big part of them. And also a big part of them was Peter McDowell, who you'll know of LFC TV. And I've got Carl Woodward, who I'll call Carlos, and you'll probably hear me call him Carlos and get confused. So just putting that out there now. But I'll start with you, Pete. You know, we had the pleasure. I mean, obviously, we didn't all work together at the same time, but we did have the pleasure of working alongside Saints. And I just want to pay tribute to him as a man as well as a broadcaster. I mean, he was fantastic, wasn't he?
Yeah. Do you know what? It's funny, isn't it? Because you could have got loads of better qualified people on than me to talk about him, because, you know, you talk about his football career and that. But we knew him as a broadcaster. Yeah, we knew him as a guy. That was why we got him back to Radio City, really, was that he was, you know, he got the job on ITV because of his personality. It helped that he was a top footballer. But yeah, we got to know him. And I think Carlos would concur with this as well, as almost like our surrogate granddad. And that was how he came into all of our lives. He had this really effervescent, sometimes quite cantankerous personality. But we warmed to it. We loved it. We loved the fact that he was moody and he'd moan about how much milk he put in his tea, or he moaned if there wasn't enough biscuits in the studio when he came in, and just that mischievous side of him. But it was really sad in the week because, I don't know, sometimes social media can be like, woe is me, can't it? And my grief's bigger than anybody else's. But I just felt like I'd lost a member of the family the other day. You know, he's you know, took my kids to his house when they were born, and they've been to see him loads of times, and his dogs have bitten me on the arse more times than I care to remember. You know, all those things that you laugh about now. But yeah, probably in the last couple of days since the initial finding out, it's just that thought of you're never going to see him again, and you're never going to hear him laugh, and you're never going to hear him slag you off. And those are the weird things that I'll miss about what was just an incredibly infectious guy.
I mean, Carlos, he was sort of one of Radio City's own, wasn't he? You know, he comes in off the back of doing Saints and Greavesy and does Saints and Snods, which is one of the most well-known sporting programmes in Liverpool. And you got the chance to work alongside him for quite a number of years, didn't you?
Yeah, and, you know, you kind of, when I first started working with him, he was working on doing the summarising, so you don't kind of meet him as much. He would come in to do like the European game sometimes away from home, and we'd have someone in the studio. But it was only when you first start working with him each week on that show, you get to know him, and you get to know him as a really good friend in the end. And it does take time to get that respect from him, just because of what a broadcaster he was, and, you know, with Saints and Greaves in doing the World Cups and that kind of thing for ITV. So you've got to earn that trust. And when you earn that trust, it's just brilliant to work with him as well. You know how he kind of, I love making him laugh on air and stuff like that. And and even the thing of, like, you know, it made me into a better producer, because you wanted the best guest as well.
Yeah.
If I got a guest who wasn't great, and, you know, we'd be looking at it before the show, he's like, who's that? Who's that? And you're thinking, no, I want to get someone who's good now in the following week and stuff like that. And you have to explain to him who he is. So he's kind of helped me so much just in my career, as well as, you know, being a friend and that kind of thing as well.
But I mean, Carlos, he is also a Liverpool legend. You know, this is the fella that my dad talked about for years and years. And when he found out his little girl was producing Saint and Snods, it was the proudest moment of his life, never mind mine. And I think we were just sort of talking off air. You know, we always talk about Liverpool partnerships. We always talk about the front three, SAS, Torres, Gerrard. Russian Dalglish, God, Keegan Toshak, we can go on forever, but Ian St. John and Roger Hunt are like absolutely legendary status. I mean, the way that I hear people talk about them, I feel like almost a little bit overlooked with actually how good they were. I mean, he was essentially a record fee signing for Liverpool. I mean, he's such an important part of Liverpool's history, isn't he?
Yeah, and I heard someone talking the other day about how they were likening him to Roberto Firmino and how a clever player he was. He was only about 5'9", wasn't he? And he was brilliant in the air. That goal against, I know it was like it was a diving header in the FA Cup final and everything, but I think he epitomised everything about Liverpool Football Club is, where he kind of wore a heart on his sleeve, didn't he? He loved the fans, loved the club, was on a long list of quality strikers that Liverpool Football Club have had over the years. And he was kind of, you know, as I say before, he was probably the first partnership with, you know, which then, you know, went on with your other one we just mentioned just then. I just think he was, you know, Mr. Liverpool in a way. You know, I don't know what Peter thinks about that.
I was saying to my little lad's 8, and we've got the picture on the wall that I tweeted about the other day, and I was trying to explain to him how big he was, and I said he was the version of Virgil van Dijk back then. You know, we talked about the problems that Liverpool had before they signed Virgil van Dijk, and I think Carragher was the one who said it famously. He's not going to sort all of Liverpool's problems out, but he did, and Saint sorted all of Liverpool's problems out that they had at the time with goals as well. And, you know, the famous story about him scoring a hat-trick on his debut when they got beat by Everton at Goodison, and he said the security wouldn't let him in. He didn't know who he was. And you think of what he went on to achieve after that. But I'll tell you another thing about him as well. He felt every single former player that died. He was a really emotional man. You both knew him really well as well. And he was very aware of his mortality, even though he'd been ill for a long time, even prior to that, you know, when he was a young, healthy guy. He felt the club more than any former player I've ever come across. That's probably the biggest compliment I can pay. Sometimes it can be fabricated, can't it? That it's just handy that ex-players are associated with Liverpool because of what it does for them. But, you know, the club meant so much to him, and the ex-players meant so much to him. And he still went to all of the Christmas parties that were organised by guys that were in the 40s because they loved him and he loved them equally as much. He was desperate to see them do well in the modern era, and some players aren't. Some players can get a little bit kind of jealous of modern success. And he was never that way. He loved going to watch Liverpool. He loved them doing well.
I always remember him saying to me that he was gutted when they lost because of the fans. He didn't want the fans to feel upset because they'd lost the game. And he was always saying to me, I always like to see them win because of the fans, because I want to see them happy and that kind of thing as well. So he had that connection with the fans as well, didn't he?
What about the phone-ins though? Because that was his first part, wasn't it, of being, you know, Radio City legend. But I can still remember Everton fans had to listen to the phone-in because if Liverpool got beat, it was such compelling radio. Let's hear the Reds moaning at Ian St. John. And one of his best lines ever was also his worst response, which was, have you ever played the game, son? If ever he didn't agree with the point that somebody made, that was his get-out clause. I've played the game, son, at the top level. And you'd be folded in the corner thinking the light, you know, the lights on the switchboard would be ignited because of his anger, and he'd give you a little smile, wouldn't he, and a little laugh because he knew what the response would be. We actually once had a letter in, Carlos might remember this, the Terrace Talk, a letter of complaint because he pushed in the queue at the post office in Thingwall over the water.
And, he just had that effect.
Yeah, it was like this woman was incandescent that, you know, this guy who feels like because he played for Liverpool, he can queue to the left instead of the right. But because he was such a kept man, like he never bought his own shoes. He never bought a pair of shoes in his life, he was telling me. Never bought clothes for himself because his, you know, his wonderful wife, Betsy, did everything for him. He said he would never know how to pay a bill, because Betsy did all of that for him as well. So why should he queue up in a post office? The postmaster at the front says, Saint, come and give me your parcels here, because he used to post all of the books that he sold when he did his autobiography. But he just thought it was so funny that someone went to the time and effort of writing a letter of complaint because he pushed in the queue.
He didn't hold back, did he? And I think that's something that we all loved about him. You talked there, Pete, about that personality. That's what made him such a brilliant broadcaster, and obviously we're all laughing, we've got some really lovely memories of him. But I think for a lot of probably the generation who'd be listening to this right now will remember him from Saints and Greaves. I mean, what was the draw that he'd done with Donald Trump? It was absolutely mad when you look back at it now. The Rumble O's Cup, it feels like only Saints could have done that draw with Donald Trump. And it was a huge success at the time, weren't it? And he sort of become really well known and loved by everyone in the country, really, for that wit and personality that we know so well.
Yeah, and I think, like I said at the start, it helped that he had a top career as a player, but he applied for that job. He applied for the job working on a World Cup via an ad in a newspaper. You know, think about that now. If you finish the game and you've played at the top level, the offers come flooding in for you. It's just who you're going to work for and how much they're going to pay you. Whereas at the time, he was, I think, 39, 40, and obviously come to the end of his career and wondered what he was going to do next and quite fancied the idea of working in the media. And I think if memory serves, he applied for the job, never got it. And then they invited him back and said, you know, we were really impressed with basically your letter of application. And we'd love to have a look at the stuff you do. And obviously then he played the straight man, didn't he? He used to, you know, roll back in his chair and laugh at all of Greavesy's jokes. But, you know, I think back then, Saints team was Tranmere because he played there and he lived on the Wirral. Greavesy's team was Southend, and they both used to play on a Friday night. So they'd have that little section, wouldn't they, where they'd show the goals from last night. And really, as a result of that, Tranmere became famous again because of the Saint and Greavesy show. Southend became this sexy club in the third and fourth division that nobody knew anything about. But because of these two guys, they made that club famous. And he was so proud of that. And so proud of the work that he'd done in TV, and he got that, and he kept that, and he kept on getting opportunities because of how he ignited everybody that was working around them. And like Carla said before, he made everybody better. He worked without a script. You know, he wouldn't know what an auto cue was. I don't think he'd ever read an auto cue while he was at ITV. And yeah, he was just an incredible broadcaster.
And Carlos, we had a laugh, didn't we, with him? I mean, I learned the ropes of Battle of the Mersey from yourself and from Dave Downey, who told me, who, again, when it's your first show with someone like Ian St. John, you get a bit nervous, who told me, throw in a question where he can't say the names and he doesn't know who the people are. So I used to throw it all. And that was a Carlos tactic that, I mean, I was throwing in like John Otsemabord and you name it, and he on it, you could hear the frustration as he's trying to read out these names, but he took it all in his stride, didn't he? And I think Pete said there, that laugh is something we'll remember sort of forever, really, isn't it?
Oh, the thing is, you heard his laugh so much as well, you know. During Battle of Mersey, I was listening to one the other day, just a random one, and it was funny. Just a random Battle of Mersey, how many Battle of Merseys there been, and I was just like wondering, it was just, I was laughing, listening to him and Snods, because that interaction between them two was absolutely brilliant. And you knew what made both of them tick as well. So you could kind of get them going. And, you know, even, you know, you think of like, it was a 2-hour show. If you get them going, start right at the start, you know, you might hear Saints out doing a rant at the start of the show or Snods doing a rant at the start of the show. You would get the show going straight away. You just flow all the way through and it'd just be such a laugh. And then, you know, if you get guests on, it wouldn't just all be serious. Well, you can have a laugh with them and stuff like that. You could throw questions in there, which you couldn't ask yourself, but you know that Saint could ask that question, or like a Snods could ask that question. So you throw that in there and it'd just be belly laughs all the time. And that's what kind of made the show and got him, you know, got him really going. But I thought he kind of mellowed in life in a way. And, you know,
what about Carlos when he used to get a guest on or an Everton caller that he didn't like and he just started doing the crossword middle of the show, and he'd give you a look as if to say, get him off, you know, what are you wasting time with an Everton caller for? And he would literally be doing the crossword, eating a sausage roll while an Everton caller was, you know, pouring his heart out about this club ruining his life.
I also remember after one of the shows on a Saturday, he'd eaten a sausage roll, and the sausage roll all over the place. Yeah. So it was my job afterwards to vacuum it up and pick it all off and everything.
He would say to you over the sausage rolls, because me and Carlos, obviously because you were coming in Saturday morning, it was neither breakfast time or lunch time. So you'd go and get like a packet of 5 sausage rolls from Greg's, cold ones for like a quid or something. And he'd come in and he'd kind of size these sausage rolls up. And what are you eating them for? And I'd say, I haven't had any breakfast. And do you want some? No, I'm not eating that. I'm not eating that. Just break us a little bit off the end. So, you know how it goes. Then he's covered in pastry. The sausage rolls are gone in 10 minutes.
I mean, I I had the privilege of going to the O2 Media Awards, I think it was 2017, where Saint was recognised with a lifetime achievement. And I think, you know, we're talking about this guy here who's got such a bundle of personality there, you, Peter, you know, he didn't want for nothing because Betty had done everything. But I tell you what, at that award, so he's so humble. Humble, like he didn't expect it. He didn't know why he was coming. You know, Dave Downey's just picking him up saying, come on, we're going to take you to this little do. And he was recognised and he got really quite emotional and Roger Hunt was there to give him the awards. And it was just a really lovely, special moment. And I got to lead him like up and down the stairs. And, you know, it's something I'll remember forever because I could just see, you know, the pure joy on his face because we talk about him being this sort of like a little bit, like you say, a little bit intimidating, this really fun character, but his sort of guard dropped a little bit that night and he realised sort of how special he was, really, and that's what, you know, we're all talking about now.
And isn't that wonderful that he knew that, Lizzie, when he was still here? You know, I think we're so guilty, aren't we, as a world of letting people know what we think about them when it's too late, but isn't it wonderful that he had that occasion where he actually saw what people thought of him and all of these young, I'm saying young, not me now, but you know, all of this new generation of young journalists that come through that he helped. So I'm getting goosebumps actually thinking about the fact that he had that moment where, you know, he got a round of applause and he saw for himself what he meant to so many different people and so many different generations.
You talk about how humble he was as well. You know, the times when he had his operations on his knee and stuff like that and whatever, he was out of action for like 4 or 5 weeks. So he wasn't coming into doing the show. There was other times when he had been ill and he was still coming to the show every single week, which showed the man he was. But I remember phoning him up just to see how he was. And he couldn't get his head around that I was phoning up to see how he was. He thought I wanted something. And he couldn't believe that someone actually cared about him. You don't even have to be caring about me. And then I always remember when Jimmy Greaves, you know, his great mate, had his stroke and I phoned him up. I says, what do you want me to do a piece? I said, no, I'm just asking you how you are, saying to what, because I know you how close you are to Greaves. He just wants to know how well you are and stuff. So he could never get his hand around that either. You know, people actually caring for him and loving him and stuff.
Yeah, he was like that quite a lot. And as well, Pete there, I mean, I didn't really know her, but, you know, just a quick word on his wife, Betty, because that's all I heard from him when he was in the office, was him talking about Betty. And, you know, I heard a story on Pressbox, funnily enough, the other day where they thought the only phone number they had was a house phone. He thought, oh, we'll just try it. And that was the only way he could reach Saint, was by his house phone. There was no mobile number. There was no anything. All you could do was reach his house phone and his wife would always pick up and sort of ask how you were and see what you wanted. And, you know, the way he spoke about her and his family, you know, he really did love them so much.
Yeah, she was the matriarch. She was the best golfer. She was a beauty queen. If you ever get the chance, actually, to look at the pictures, those famous pictures of, I think they came back on the Orient Express, didn't they, when they won the 65?
With the FA Cup on the table. Yeah.
And you see Betty sat alongside him, Ron Yates and his wife the other side, and Betty's beautiful. And I think I'm right in saying as well, he used to say that she was, he was a toy boy as well, because there was a little bit of an age difference between them, but she was the one who drove him to leave Scotland at the start, in a time when obviously England was a different country, wasn't it? In every sense of the word back then, he was playing at Motherwell and Betty was the one who forced him to go to England. Betty was the one who would persuade him to go in and ask Shanks for more money when he got his contract. And Betty was the one that was most angry when he went in at Christmas and got a small turkey. He said it was more like a pigeon. And then he realized that Liverpool were trying to get him out. You know, she was the driving force behind everything. And yeah, your heart goes out to her, really, because she's looked after him for a long time, not just when he's been ill, but, you know, since he was a young man, because that was how their relationship worked. But she's really strong as well. And she's very active, you know, takes on new courses all the time to learn new skills. And I'm sure the family will rally around. And I'm sure it'll help things like this, just hearing people's memories of him and how much he meant to people.
Yeah, it's been so lovely hearing everyone's memories and especially both of yours. Carlos, if you can sum up, you know, Ian St. John, sort of pay a tribute to him for our listeners who maybe are hearing things about him for the first time. How would you do that?
Well, I was going to say, we said about how people have been paying tribute. I watched Jurgen Klopp yesterday in his press conference talking about him. And like, I was on the press conference, I was welling up a little bit when he was talking about him. And I think he only met Saint once, didn't he, the way he was talking. And for him to be smiling when he was talking about him, have those memories, it showed what a man Ian St. John was, because he's made that big impression on Jurgen Klopp in that one meeting with him. And I think that kind of says everything about the man himself, I think.
Can I just tell you that one, Liz? Because we actually took him there for that meeting, and that picture of him and Jurgen Klopp was a really natural moment, because we didn't have a photographer there or anything like that. We were filming it, but the cameraman was in a different place because they were filming something else. Jurgen just managed to walk into the canteen, and he always obviously had an idea of if ex-players were in the building or whatever he'd normally been told. But I think I'd only told Matt McCann, his press officer, a minute or two before he'd come in. And he kind of looked, and then he looked again, and he might not have recognised him. But as soon as he got word of who he was, he came bounding over, and Saint had this shirt from, he didn't know when, it had just been under his stairs for years and years. And, you know, Jurgen gets things all the time, as you can imagine, people sending him pictures and clothes that they want him to wear and stuff like that. And Saint had this wonderful, you know, West Germany shirt that he thinks he might have been given as a gift. But Jurgen knew whose shirt it might have been. He knew his history of German football, and there was just this wonderful exchange between these two guys who loved football, and Jurgen saying to Saint, I can't take this from you, you know, this is an unbelievable thing for you to give away. And Saint just saying to him, I want you to have it, it'll mean more to you than it means to me. And you just got the impression that the first thing Jurgen would have done after asking Tony Barrett and Matt McCann a little bit about him was go home and Google him, because of the impact he made on the club. And Jurgen loves stories like that anyway, but you know, the quotes that he came out with the other day were heartfelt. I know that for a fact. He was genuinely bowled over by the fact he got to meet him and felt truly privileged that he got to learn a little bit more about his story. And the players as well. The players got to watch the YouTube video of him chinning that Fulham player, which they couldn't believe.
Well, listen, like you just said there, Pete, you know, Klopp said it was a privilege to meet him. I'm sure to speak on behalf of all of us that it was a real privilege to work with him and meet him and get to know him. And I just want to say thank you very much to both of you two for joining me today to talk about Ian St. John, the Liverpool legend, the fantastic broadcaster, but more importantly, the wonderful man. Back over to the show.
And it's John Gibbons with the Last Fan Standing quiz and Last Fan Standing. We've been partnering with all season now and for a little bit longer. And it is a quiz app that you play on your phone, and we do the Liverpool questions on there. So you'll get me or Neil asking you LFC questions if you log on. And it's good fun, and there's predictor stuff around the games where you can win some decent prizes as well. So we'd encourage everyone to get involved. It's the Last Fan Standing app. It's completely free to download. And yeah, get stuck in, come and play with us. And yeah, if you get your mates involved and stuff, you can get little leagues together and yeah, get a decent ITK score and enjoy yourself from there. So we want to do a little bit of a demonstration of how it works. So I have a willing volunteer. We've got Martin Hansen, who's joining me on Zoom. Martin, thanks very much.
Thank you for having me. Looking forward to it.
We'll see how we go. Just before we start, you tell me just before, you live in the Oslo area. So how's life over there at the moment?
It's pretty cold. We're in the. There's been some snow melt in the past week from being over 4 feet of snow, and then things warmed up quickly this last week, just after I got back from a skiing trip. So I got to enjoy the snow at least.
Oh, fantastic. We went to Oslo with the Anfield Wrap. We did a couple of live shows over a very boozy weekend. And we did sort of, yeah, something in Oslo. But we sort of looked after and take it up to the hills and saw a big sort of downhill slope and things like that, which was sort of very impressive. But we certainly had some big coats because it was in February and it was absolutely freezing. But no, we had a brilliant time. But anyway, we'll get on with the quiz and we'll see how we do. So all these questions, Martin, have won the Champions League. Obviously the second leg against Leipzig next week. So ahead of that, we've got some Champions League themed questions for you. So for the first question, how many times have Liverpool won the European Cup / Champions League? Is it 5, 6 or 7?
6.
Of course, let's talk about 6, baby. It was 6 in 2019. Okay, we're off to a good start. Question 2, in the 2-0 win in the first leg against Leipzig, Salah scored the first goal. Who scored the second? Was it Firmino or Mane?
Mane.
It was Sadio Mane. 1-2. Doing well. So question 3. Naby Keita played for RB Leipzig before joining Liverpool. Is that true or false?
That is true.
It is true. We signed him for $53 million in 2018 from RB Leipzig. Question four, which of these teams was not in Liverpool's Champions League group this season? So was not in Liverpool's Champions League group this season. Ajax, Atalanta or FC Porto?
FC Porto.
Correct. We play them every year, so it's easy to forget that we haven't played them yet this season, but they weren't there. You're on four, Martin. You're flying. Question five. In the incredible 4-0 win against Barcelona in 2019, who scored the first goal? Was it Origi, Wijnaldum or Henderson?
Origi.
Yeah, we're on five. We could go to the end here. They've given us 10. Number six, which Liverpool player has the most appearances in European club competition? So which Liverpool player has the most appearances in European club competition? Is it Carragher, Gerrard or Hoopier?
Carragher?
It is Carragher, correct. He's got the most out of those three. I think he's second, isn't he, in the all-time behind Ian Callaghan, who will never be caught up, I don't think. But Carragher's second in the whole time. He's played 150 games in Europe for Liverpool, which is more than most clubs. But enough about Everton. Question seven. The 2021 Champions League final is scheduled to be played in which country? Is it Turkey or Russia?
Turkey.
Yeah, it's in Istanbul again, of course. So it feels like a good omen. Feels like a good omen. Question eight. We are flying, Martin. Who scored the equalising third goal against AC Milan in the 2005 Champions League final? So who scored the equaliser, the third goal? Was it Gerrard, Alonso or Schmitter?
Alonso.
Correct. Question nine. Liverpool have won two Champions League finals on penalty shootouts. One was against Milan in 2005. The other was against who? Was it Real Madrid, Roma or Bruce? Yeah, Roma. He doesn't even need the options. Martin, he's like an encyclopedia. Question 10. This is to go all the way in. I'm going to have to send you some merch if you get this from me. Liverpool won one of their European Cups at Wembley. Who did they beat? Was it Borussia Mönchengladbach, Club Brugge or Real Madrid? So Liverpool won one of their European Cups at Wembley. I think it was 78. Who did they beat? Mönchengladbach, Club Brugge or Real Madrid?
It was Club Brugge and it was Kenny's goal.
King Kenny, look at that. Even at the score, 1-0, King Kenny. It was the end of his first season at Liverpool and he scored the winning goal in a European Cup final. Not bad, but also not bad. Mine, let me know which of our T-shirts you want, mate. I'll send you one because that was fantastic. Everyone else has been getting ones, twos or threes. Mine just comes on. The fucking big man from Oslo smashes its head off. That was good, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was great. Thank you. I have to give a small shout out to the Anfield Rap Ultras WhatsApp group that tipped me off that you were asking for participants.
I mean, I can't believe there's a secret WhatsApp group that I don't know about. I'm absolutely furious about that. But anyway, get me in, especially if it's looking good. But anyway, Mark, well done, mate. We're doing this ahead of Chelsea, so enjoy the game tonight. And hopefully we'll be able to welcome you to Liverpool soon, hey?
Yeah, I'd love to get back. I was over there for the final in Madrid.
Ah, wonderful, wonderful. Cheers. Yeah, we'll get you. We all miss, not just you, but everyone, obviously, but hopefully we'll be back soon. But man, congratulations, mate. Well done. And send me your address and we'll get you some stuff out.
Thank you.
And it's John Gibbons back with the weekend. And now, thanks a lot to Lizzie for that. And also, obviously, to Carlos and Peter for sharing their fantastic memories of the Saints. Okay, we're going to look ahead to the Liverpool-Fulham game now. And what we can do, and he hasn't got loads of options, Keogh, but he needs to find solutions. You know, we can ask the lads to go again, but that hasn't particularly worked. You know, or he can look to sort of shake it up. You know, there are a few players on the bench who could maybe come in, or he could even look at different formations and things like that. He hasn't got a huge amount of time, is what I'd say. Yeah, they'll be resting today, and then he'll have a little bit of training tomorrow, and then went into Sunday. So he hasn't got a huge amount of time. But what do you think he can do, and what do you think he might do ahead of Sunday?
I mean, it may be a case of putting another midfielder in and dropping Firmino. If he does that, then it might be a different game in terms of how many chances we have, how much we have the ball, all that type of stuff. But I don't know. I mean, honestly, I'm not too sure as to what he's going to do. I just don't lose the game.
Yeah, they need to stop the rot, Chloe, and it is a rot at the moment. And you think, oh, Fulham at home, easy, but, you know, they're in a decent run of form themselves. You know, they've got attacking talent. They went to Goodison and won, and it is another one that, you know, we could potentially lose, and so we need to do something. What would you do as a master tactician? What would you be looking to do on Sunday?
For me, I'd definitely drop Firmino. I think his form has stunk the place out. And when, you know, when you're so reliant on him as a backbone, you know, he usually, when he's on it, we're absolutely unreal. But when we're not on it, you know, it's very easy to point out him as one of the worst players. For me, I'd like to see Shaq, whether that's in the midfield or coming off the right, and I'd put Salah up top. If not, you know, I'd defo start Jota. I'm really excited to see Jota. I don't know whether he's fit or not. But another main factor is I do not want to see Fabinho at the back. So, like, if we're playing Fabinho, like, I think it's gone now in the sense of you might as well just do anything you can and try and be the best that you can. So I've had enough of centre-halves not playing at centre-half. So if we have a fit and known centre-half, that's not Reece Williams, because I don't think right now it's a fit for him. But, you know, Nat Phillips, I don't know where he's gone, but for me, he was our best centre-half that we've had. And since, you know, Virgil, Gomez, Matip, all of them have been injured. So I'd really like a decent centre-back pairing. Of course, Kabak's kind of got to start. I'd like to see Fabinho in midfield. And maybe with Fabinho in midfield, Thiago can actually have a decent game. You know, he's got that support behind him so that he can go and have an adventure up forward. So I think they're the main changes. I'd start Curtis Jones. I think Curtis Jones, for a 19-year-old lad or whatever, he's one of the main people who've carried the team in the last couple of games. So those would be my changes. But I'm really not arsed what we do. I just want the win. And if not the win, I'll settle for a draw at this rate, because another loss, honestly, I might go and have a cry.
Well, I'll have a cry. That's how the show's going to finish.
I've had a cry already, I think.
At least you're not having to sing, mate. That's all I'd say, you know.
Well, I think about that Atletico game when he had to get up on stage after we just got knocked off the European Cup and we were staring the pandemic in the face and thought that was a tough gig. But can you imagine trying to play at the minute? Ooh. I think it was a favour. Good, the fact that we're not in the ground for this as well, can you imagine some of the shouts that would be coming out in that ground at the minute?
Yeah, it would be absolutely wild. Ian, in terms of Chloe's points around, you know, trying to get Fabinho in midfield and maybe using Jota, I think anything that they can do just to sort of freshen it up a bit, I think would be a positive. You know, Jota could come in, and he's not been part of these losses really. Obviously, he gets on towards the end, but he's someone who's able to come in, you know, without the recent baggage. You know, if you were able to somehow get Fabinho in midfield, you know, he'd have energy from that. He'd be like, brilliant, I'm playing in my normal position. You know, stuff like them being a bit more upbeat, giving yourself a bit of a lift might give everyone a bit of a lift, you know, if you can manage to do that.
Yeah, but has anyone checked that this Ben Davis guy's real? Fucking hell, where the fuck is he? I think he might have had a couple of injuries to be fair to him, but it just seems a bit of an odd one. I mean, maybe if he's available, maybe you could look at someone like that to come in, because, you know, your point there about no baggage, listen, I don't think it's ideal. I think the manager said at the very start of, or I should say at the end of the window, you know, we don't usually go shopping at Preston for footballers, but you're playing against a team, a lower end of the Premier League football team in Fulham. Maybe it's a game where you could kind of use him, and it allows to get Fabinho back into midfield. Because I don't know where Nat Phillips is with his fitness. Obviously, he wasn't involved last night. I think in an ideal world, you do want to see Fabinho in the middle of the park, but it's just been so difficult. And I've been one of the people probably saying more often than not, you've probably got to play him centre-half, because he's one of the few who is, you know, he understands the team, he understands how we play, and he's a very, very switched on football, and he's tactically pretty superb, you know, 9 out of 10 most weeks. So I can understand why he's gone with Fabinho a lot of times this season, but it does feel like now you've got to do everything you can to try and get him back into the middle of the park, because we're crying out for something there. I'd like to see him tweak it from a system point of view, John, as well. And whether that's 4-2-3-1, yeah, you can see some sense in that, getting more forwards on the pitch at the minute, because goals is a massive issue. I think Jimmy Pearce put out a tweet last night saying it was over 10 hours since we scored a goal from open play at Anfield, which is just absolutely wild. So I think getting more forwards on the pitch, absolutely. Jota, if he can go from the start, then yes. You know, and Naby Keita as well. Listen, you know, I think we know Naby Keita's a talented footballer, but getting him on the pitch has been the main issue in his time at Liverpool. It's, what, it's 3 seasons now. You feel like you've seen nowhere near enough of Naby. But if he can go from the start playing, because at some point he probably will get injured again, so use him while he can. And maybe they might switch it, and maybe do, like, you could do maybe a variation of 4-4-2 as well. If you're thinking about dropping Bobby And maybe if Jota can't go from the start and just get Mane and Salah close to each other and do a little bit of a two up top thing and maybe see if he can do something like that, whether it's a diamond formation or whether it's a box midfield, whatever it might be, I think that might be another option as well. If he's not keen on the 4-2-3-1, which has been a little bit hit miss, it's fair to say. But yeah, you need to see him do something. And I think, as I said before, John, you know, that high line just maybe needs to be dropped a little bit, because if it is going to be Kabak again, you know, he's not blessed with pace. And I think it's just an obvious out for the opposition to put a ball over the top, and then anything can happen. And at the minute, where we're so low on confidence and there's different partnerships going on, there's different players, different personnel coming in all the time, it's hard to get any kind of understanding. And I think it just creates a little bit of nervousness when people are dropping balls over your head and stuff. So if you can do something with that, that'll be good as well. It certainly ease my nerves a bit. But as I say, I think what you do want to see more than anything else is maybe a little bit of a switch back to that mentality. You know, that mentality monsters thing that got labelled a while ago to this Liverpool team, you can understand why, because they were mentality monsters. That's disappeared. Now, we know why. Some of what's happened is just, it's such a freak of nature what's happened to this Liverpool team in terms of injuries. But as we said at the very start, there's some of the things like not going down when there's contact on you. No one's thanking you for it. Go down, get the fucking penalty, move on from there. But when we saw Everton come to our place as well, and we pretty much rolled the red carpet out that day. And I think, you know, even things like the Dominic Calvert-Lewin penalty, I didn't see anyone getting around the ref.
Yeah.
And it was one of those penalties where it never looked a pen at the time. You're thinking, you know, at least appeal for it. There was just almost a, Liverpool just accepted it. And I don't want to see that. I want to see people be a bit more vocal, lead from the front. You know, there's lads there who, as I said before, they've won multiple honours now. They need to be stepping up. This is a time where you've got to see some of those players step up and be counted. So, if nothing else, you want to see a shift in mentality come Sunday.
Would you be tempted to try and do something with Milner, Keo, just because, you know, he has got that mentality, hasn't he? You know, if you're picking your best Liverpool team with everyone fit, he probably doesn't get in it at the moment, not when everything's going well. But, you know, in terms of the chips are down, you know, in terms of someone who's maybe going to show a bit of leadership and a bit more fight and a bit more of what Ian's talking about, he's an option who the manager might look at.
Yeah, I do, to be honest, because as someone mentioned the show, I think, I'm not too sure you mentioned it, but we had a team of leaders last year. And we haven't had any leaders other than Van Dijk and Henderson in this side this year. So if we can install more of that on the pitch and have bigger voices and you know, examples, whether that, I'm not just talking examples in terms of quality, I'm talking examples like you're gonna make that tackle if James Milner's looking at you on the pitch, you're gonna chase him down, you know, because you can't be bothered getting back in the changes. You have to explain to James Milner why you haven't been putting it in. So maybe that's an option, yeah. I like James Milner. I think he's great. It's just you can't rely on him playing Wednesday and Saturday and Wednesday and Sunday because he hasn't got it in him. So, but if we can put him in for the game to stop getting beat at Anfield, then yeah, let's have a go with that, Lee.
I think we're all talking ourselves into a win here, Chloe. We've boxed out. We've picked about 15 players, so we might have to sort of bring that down a bit. But, you know, there is options there for the manager, isn't it? He's just got to find the right balance and find something that works.
Yeah, we've definitely got enough quality in the team. You just haven't seen it in recent results and recent games. And, you know, you need something to fall for, you know, a bit of luck. And to be fair, I thought that was, you know, when that Werner goal got disallowed, I thought, oh my God, this is a moment. We've actually, like, this is a slice of luck that we've been missing. That's something that, you know, you can get behind and use it as a real positive. And instead, we just did the same stuff and didn't get ourselves up for the game. And, you know, Fulham, they nearly got a draw against Tottenham. They got a goal wrongfully disallowed. So these aren't going to turn over for you, especially not in the form that we're in right now. But we have the experience in our team to surely get something out of the game. And I can't think of another loss, because if I do, honestly, I might not even watch the game if I seriously believe that. Because I've got to think of it positively. Otherwise, there's just no point in me watching a football game, because if I'm watching it expecting nothing out of it, I'm going to be really annoyed from the beginning. Even if no one does anything wrong, even if we don't come out with anything, I'm going to be annoyed because I've got myself in that mindset. So I'm trying to stay positive, even though there's not a lot of positives going.
Oh, I was off. I was waiting, and now Chloe's brought me back down. And now Ian, I'm thinking about Josh Maggio legging us everywhere.
Oh, what a thought. I mean, touching on Chloe's point there, I didn't see the Fulham disallowed goal until late on. My God, I mean, talk about hard lines. That's absolutely ridiculous, getting goals chalked off for that. But there you go. So they'll have a they'll have a point to prove, John, because I think what they've done really well over recent weeks is they've been able to tell themselves that there's still a chance for them to stay up. And it didn't look like that a few weeks back. You know, they were probably 8 points off it in terms of safety. That's not the case anymore. They've pulled three or four teams right back into the mix. So it's fair play to them. Now, Scott Parker has been on a fairly steep learning curve. Beginning of the season, Fulham was so open. They were so easy to play against. And they were on the end of some really poor results. But he's managed to turn that round and he's done pretty well. So I don't think it's going to be easy. And I think their tails will be up given what's happened at Anfield the last five games. You know, why wouldn't you be thinking, well, we could go there and do something similar. So Liverpool have got to be, you know, the mentality's got to be right. And, you know, it's okay some of these players coming out after games and throwing out the usual stuff that they do and, you know, putting tweets out and saying, listen, we need to be better, we need to be that. Go and show us, go and fucking do it. Because that's what we're at a point now where this club, this team can't afford to drop any more points. It's absolutely imperative that they're in the Champions League next season, John. And as I said before, it's hard to convince yourself that that's going to happen now because they are falling so far behind. But from an investment point of view, from a planning point of view, we know these owners, and I bang on about them a little bit more than I probably should at times, they are cautious. And if you're not in the Champions League, you're thinking, well, what money is Jürgen going to have to spend? Because by the way, he needs to spend. And I know this is a team that's won the league recently, but you can see there's a number of players now maybe just coming to a point where their best years are slightly behind them and they're coming to that crucial point where they're on that tipping point where they've been great, they're still going to be decent players, but they're not at the very, very best.
Certainly not. All right, I mean, let's do a prediction. Keogh, are they going to win or what? Just say yeah, please.
I've got to say yeah. I said yeah last time to winning the derby and winning every game that we had coming up and didn't work, so I may as well say it again. Because if it doesn't work, then at least say, as Chloe said, there's no point in watching the match if you don't think you're going to win. So yeah, we're gonna beat them. James Milner's going to be man of the match. John and we'll have a little talk about that next week. All right.
Sounds good to me, Chloe. I mean, I'd take a goal at this stage of the proceedings. But what do you think will happen Sunday?
Every time I've came on a show like this and I've said 2-0, leave one. So I'm going to say 2-0. And if it doesn't happen, please don't murder me, okay? Like, don't come for me. It's not my
fault. I'll have 2-0 as well, yeah.
2-0's all around. 2-0 to the Reds. James Milner, man of the match. That sounds good to me. Listen, thanks a lot for joining us. Hope you've enjoyed the weekend. It's a great time still to subscribe to the Anfield Wrap. And obviously, we'll be covering Fulham on Sunday with pre- and post-match content. So do come and join us. But in the meantime, thanks a lot to all our guests. And of course, Lizzie for doing that fantastic segment on Ian St. John as well. Up the Reds. Have a brilliant weekend. Sports Social Podcast Network.